What we're going to have to do is take a Jesus approach. And I'm encouraging white police officers across this country, get out of the police car and visit black people and listen. Don't talk.
Yeah.
Listen. And then on the next call, listen.
Let's just be real.
Brother, Jimmy Meeks, who has been in law enforcement for 35 years, and he's actually still actively a police officer, technically. And he also is the founder of Sheepdog Ministries. He's been in ministry for 47 years, and he's just now starting another outreach program / nonprofit that's going to be specifically for law enforcement called the Cornelius Project, which is going to be insanely awesome and obviously much needed with the times that we're going through right now. So, Mr. Meeks, Jimmy, how are you doing today, sir?
I am fine. Thanks for having me on. It's cool. It's a cool day. It's a good day to be outside, and here we are stuck inside.
Yes, sir. No, definitely.
Let's keep this short so I can go outside.
Definitely. So the reason I wanted to bring you on, obviously, we got to connect a little bit before this, but I've had somebody on who got to voice their heart and their reasoning behind, defunding the police, that whole movement. And right now, it's been really hard for me to find someone in law enforcement to interview. And so it was really nice. Like, I feel like it was God-given that I got to connect with you because you're literally the next episode after that episode. So it's both perspectives. So someone can listen to both of them and, make their own opinions and hopefully just bring some clarity to the subject and listen to the humanity side behind, police officers and law enforcement and the humanity side behind, somebody
yes.
who is so pro, not just Black Lives Matter movement, but also, the rioting, the looting, all that stuff. So it's a completely different contrast. Not saying that you're not for, Black Lives Matter, because we're all for Black Lives Matter, the verbiage and the term, but a lot of us, not the organization, right?
And Frank, if you studied that organization, one of the things that would disturb you is that one of its founders is into a religion called IFA, I-F-A, and that is a religion that is very satanic. And that ritualistic, they chant spirits, they communicate with the dead. She's a reverend in it. Her name is Patrice Couleurs. I'm not sure I'm saying it right. There's one of the three women that founded it, and she has been known to go to the where some of the people have died, and she channels with their spirits, and it's just been a lot of that going on in Portland right now. I have pictures of people engaging in demonic and in witchcraft and what have you at
in Portland.
So it's been quite a mess. And they're also into divination. So divination was so serious in the Old Testament. It was such a violation that you were put to death if you practiced it. It's a form of witchcraft. A form of witchcraft is what it is, and it's predicting the future. Fortune telling is a divination. And it's a pretty serious thing. So people that study, if you really study that organization, you begin to learn some things that, wow, it's very anti-American, pro-socialist, and it wants to go a path that has been proven to not work. In the 1900s, we had socialism around for 100 years, and it cost 100 million people died a violent death.
Jeez.
Under all of that. So there's a lot of ignorance. People are not, it's very obvious that people are not doing their homework. And the police departments, you can argue all day for defunding, but police are not going to be defunded. They're not going to let it happen. City councils won't let it happen. Governors, state legislatures, federal law is not going to let it happen. President Trump's surely not going to let it happen. And Joe Biden has said he's against it. So it's just a lot of hot air and smoke right now. That part will blow over, but you can't get rid of the police.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many misconceptions and so much. I've been writing this book for cops, and truth has fallen by the wayside.
Yeah.
And people have no idea that the police are shooting and killing fewer people than they ever have before. Even the number of police officers being shot and killed has been cut in half in the last 20 years. So facts, I know they don't have a lot of bearing on people. People tend to believe what they feel or what they see on the news.
Yeah. And I think it's because
there's a lot of stuff circling out there that's, I'm not worried about a lot of it because it's not going to happen.
And I think a lot of people, like, also they run into the issue where, or we run into the issue where it becomes personal, right? Because it only takes one for it to be personal, right? So my dad had an experience with a police officer that I think was completely wrong. My dad can't really verbalize, like, you know, he doesn't speak English very, very well, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say that those police officers definitely were abusive because they had a gun drawn on him before he could even open his eyes because he was sleeping in a truck, right? And then at that point, you just wake up and it's straight fear and panic. And then you open the door and you're like, what's going on? The best that you can say in English. And then you're thrown on the ground. So after experiencing that, it kind of becomes a little personal of like, man, if this happened to someone else, I could see them being ticked off. And then the whole George Floyd thing that happened where a lot of people made it personal, like, if this happened to your friend or to someone you loved, would you be okay with it? And I think that's what really exploded it all, was when people kind of started taking ownership of it. Because, you know, like, I agree with what you're saying, because it's facts. They're killing less people than they ever have.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
and you know, and 98% of these police killings are justified. 98. So 990.
Yeah.
Of the police killed 1,004 people in 2019.
Wow.
1,004 out of 330 million people in the country. Yeah. They killed, and 98% of those were justified. So 990 of those 1,000 shootings or killings were justified.
Yeah.
And even when you look at, like, well, gee, they're killing a lot of unarmed people. They killed, last year the police killed 19 unarmed white people. 19. Yeah. They killed 10 unarmed black people. 10. Yeah. Now think about that. That is fewer. Doctors, according to the Center for Disease Control, doctors cause 250,000 deaths a year through negligence, improper prognosis, diagnosis, whatever the word is, surgical errors. The doctors kill 250,000 people a year. Maybe we should start a group, patientslivesmatter.com. Maybe somebody needs to do something like that. So there's this is way deeper.
Being held accountable.
Just the police. The police are not doing what they're, it's just a fact. And when the police are wrong, I'm quick to point it out. Even the George Floyd case, we haven't had a trial yet. Our Constitution lets us have a trial. And there are pieces of evidence that have been withheld from the public about that. The other videos that are now coming out. We're seeing a whole lot more. I was reading a blog the other day by an African-American who complained of how cold that Minneapolis officer looked with his hands in his pocket. His hands were not in his pocket. His gloves were black. His pants were dark colored. It looked as if his hands were in his pocket. The officer, Derek Chauvin, the one that's now in prison, his hands were not in his pocket. Not that that has any play on it, but people are just expressing their opinions based on what they feel. And I'm not saying it was justified. I'm saying we haven't had a trial. In this country, you are innocent until proven guilty.
We say that, but since it's, this is one of my biggest things, right? Since you have people in a jury that decide whether you're innocent or guilty, like, really what we do as a society is we say you are guilty until proven innocent, right? Like, if someone gets arrested, someone's initial thought is, well, he had to do something to get arrested. So obviously he's guilty of something, right? And so,
and I see their point on that, but I mean, that's why we have the trial. We don't do like the Wild West. We don't string you up or hang you within the hour.
Yeah.
We've got to refine that system. And a lot of what's happening too is that, you know, who failed George Floyd? Who failed Michael Brown? Remember that killing in August of 2014?
Yeah.
Michael Brown, who was passed around from one family to the next, didn't live with his parents when he died. Of course, everybody's claiming him when he died. I've read a lot about his personal life twice. I have researched his life. I read research on his life. I mean, it's a heartbreaking case, you know, but there we had all these professional football players and thousands of people holding their hands up saying, don't shoot, hands up, don't shoot. Michael Brown did not have his hands up. We learned that from the 40 plus witnesses at his trial. The whole thing was a farce. It was a joke in terms of what the officer was accused of. Was he perfect, the officer? No, he didn't do everything right. I assume nobody does. But Michael Brown had just robbed a convenience store. Michael Brown was high on drugs. and those things can come back to haunt you. We tell people one of the best ways to not have a bad contact with the police is to keep the law. You know, I don't have a lot of problems with the police because I don't rob stores. I don't do other things. I'm not saying that will fix everything, but you know, the Bible says, and I assume this is a Christian program you've got here, or basically a
It's everything.
It's everything. Well, you know, I'm a Christian. You know, the Bible says the police officer is sent by God to punish those who do wrong. So people, but you know, many of these guys are failing. This is what breaks my heart for the Michael Browns, the George Floyds, or for that matter, anybody.
Because you were actually at George Floyd's funeral too.
Oh, right? No. I told you I'd had a terrible dream. I wasn't. He was, you might want to edit that out, but I had a terrible dream that I was because this whole thing has been bothering me so much. But passage of time, you see, wow, there's going to be more to this. It's not going to turn out like what people are hoping. And because of all the protesters and the rioting, they're probably going to have what's called a change of venue. You probably won't see a trial in Minneapolis because the officers could not get one, a fair one there. And you can request a change of venue because the publicity is too strong. So all the rioting and protesting is hurting the cause.
Yeah.
There's no time. It could be 10 years before they have that trial.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Or that's what I was talking about earlier is that for an officer having to seek a change of venue, it's because in everyone's eyes, he's already guilty.
Anybody could have it.
Before any evidence has been provided. What I do want to hit on a little bit is, you know, you were talking about Michael Brown and, you know, how he had robbed, like a lot of people are saying, well, he did this and this and this to kind of justify the murder. And then what the other side is saying, does he not deserve a trial just because he was high, right? So
does he deserve a trial?
Yeah, exactly. Because,
Who are you asking me about?
No, so Michael Brown and as well recently with George Floyd, right? As soon as it came up that George Floyd was high and his record, this is what a lot of people started saying, right? They started blasting the record. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look who George Floyd really, almost insinuating like he deserved what he got. If he would just be a good person, this wouldn't happen.
And I would never say that.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Brown.
I just want to clear that up. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael Brown got shot because he grabbed the officer's gun. You know, if you've studied that, you know that he grabbed the officer. That's why when the Justice Department under President Obama came to Ferguson, they could find no charges to bring against the officer because it was justified. When you grab an officer's gun, he's going to shoot you.
At that point, you're asking for it. Yeah. Like,
and Frank, there's a big misconception about people say, well, you can't just shoot unarmed people. Yes, you can. You don't know that they're unarmed. I know officers. I mean, I have been in situations where I've had to tell bad guys, keep your hands where I can see them. And then they whip out at nighttime, they whip out an object like a telephone, their smartphone, iPhone, Android, whatever. The officer cannot tell what that is. So if you don't completely comply, keep those hands where they can be seen. That officer, these police they're kind of on edge right now.
Yeah.
And I had dozens and dozens and hundreds, if not thousands, of experiences where I said to people, you've got to keep your hands, you know, your hands are the only thing that you can be shot with. So,
yeah,
you know, so a lot of guys don't get that. If you pull out an iPhone or some other object, you could get hurt.
It's scary too, because, you know, I try and see both sides of everything before I make a perspective or an opinion on
it. We don't have the George Floyd side yet because we haven't had a trial. All we had is one video. And now we know, you know, George Floyd was high on drugs. He had a lot of drugs in his system. You know, he was battling the coronavirus. I don't know if you know that or not. There was a lot of what's called excited delirium going on with him. There was a lot of things wrong with his body that contributed to all of that.
Yeah.
And even the autopsies that are coming out are showing some things that are not going to be very welcome by the public. And I don't, you know, I want the truth to prevail.
Yeah.
I want the truth to prevail, but I can't just sit back and say that, you know, the police are out of control because the evidence is not there.
Yeah.
About 250 black people were shot last year. 500 white people were shot. And I know that comes back to percentages and what have you, but We really do need to keep the facts in mind and seek the truth.
Do you, but, you know, given everything, you know, he was high, he was battling COVID, all of these other things, do you think the knee on the neck was justified? Because coming from someone who's who's trained in a martial art about, you know, to take people's lives essentially by choking them out or breaking their arms or, you know, ripping off their knee, like, I know for a fact that an untrained neck can go unconscious in 8 seconds, right? A trained neck, in other words, somebody who's been training, who has felt the pressure, who knows, hey, if I adjust 1 centimeter, I can actually get blood flow again to my brain. Like, a trained neck can last a little bit longer, but they cannot last for how many minutes was he on his neck?
What the officer was doing was approved training by the Minneapolis Police Department. That was approved training. Secondly, and we'll need to verify this, or otherwise you need to edit it out, but the first autopsy showed no bruising on the neck. No bruising. And if we go back and look, once again, we need to go back and look at that video because it was back in May 25th. There was it wasn't just on the neck. Knee was resting on the back. The officer is thinking, I'm keeping him in this position until the ambulance gets here because something's not right. Something's not right. I certainly don't think the officer was thinking that what was about to happen was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, every cop I know would, man, I'd give up a year's pay to take that day back. I mean, that was, the whole thing was awful.
Yeah. But, I mean, because
you know, but a lot of facts are coming out about this, though. Yeah. You know, that was approved training, if I'm not mistaken, and I have read that. But
What I think a lot of people are saying now is, like, if that is approved training, right, and you have a guy who's already handcuffed and you got two or three other officers there with you, and he's saying, I can't breathe, would it not have been easier to pick him up with your boys that, you know, if you can't contain
it, and it looks that way from your perspective, you know, it's kind of like Monday morning quarterbacking. You know, I know what play that Dak Prescott should have called now that it's Monday and the game is over. But also we're seeing that if you go back and watch it, if I'm not mistaken, his knee is not right on his neck. I mean, when you detain somebody and they're on their stomach and you're waiting for an ambulance, you know, resting your knee or your leg, keeping them down, has not been something that has been, you know, eradicated from police departments. I mean, there's different ways.
Yeah.
I don't think the officer was thinking what was going on. We also know that the police have been told, if you can talk, you can breathe. Mm-hmm. We have been told that 10 million times. So maybe we're going to have to change that.
Yeah.
No, but we still have to look at the deeper issue that is that if you're going to live, you know, people that live a criminal lifestyle are going to eventually have a run-in, you know, with the police. And there's always more to, I mean, I've drawn my gun on people that were highly offended. You mentioned your dad earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the details of that. But what if somebody was told, oh, there's a man sleeping in a car, he's got a gun? Those officers, keep in mind, those officers are on hyper alert right now. And they have been for years. The good cops know how to stay alive. Yeah. They would rather you be offended than they would be dead.
Yeah.
And if you use all the caution that's necessary, you know, I think my first question would be to somebody, if they've been approached in the car asleep, what are you doing in the car asleep? What are you doing there? That's not normal. I don't know the situation with your dad. Mm-hmm. But remember, police officers are much more suspicious. You know, the Bible says of Jesus, he trusted no man, John 2:25. I love that verse. Mm-hmm. I stayed alive 35 years because I knew how not to trust people. I mean, my wife told me the other day she loved me, and I thanked her, and I said, can I get that in writing? I mean, I'm just one of those guys. You know, I want to see the proof. Police officers are like that. We want to see facts. Don't tell us, you know, don't just tell us what you think. Where is the evidence, and where does that evidence take you? And you get, I had a lot of calls, thousands and thousands of calls in my 35 years. And you get two or three details. All you get is what is coming from that dispatcher. All she has is what's coming from that one or two people that called. And many times you get there and realize it is the complete opposite of the info you were given when you were sent to that You don't know what you're walking into.
It's an extremely difficult job, right? I don't think anyone who's talking about it is saying this is easy. No. But the police
are backing off is what they're doing. I mean, I have stories from police departments all over the country, and this is where the public's going to pay, because the majority of Americans, including African Americans, they do not want the police defunded. This is just a few loud voices that are angry and hateful, and they would be mad, and they're going to play the victim game no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. They're always going to say, poor me. I remember I went to Michael Brown's where he was killed. I was there 4 weeks after that happened. I went around interviewing people who were there at the scene. Not one person brought up Michael Brown's name. Wow. I remember one lady, she was a block away from where he was killed. And I just asked her a question, how are you doing? Whatever, you will never guess what she was mad about. She didn't even live there. She lived in New York. She said, you see that McDonald's across the street? I said, yes. They're only paying $9 an hour. Excuse me? Mm-hmm. I thought we were talking about Michael Brown. The other guy there was from South Carolina. None of the people lived in that area. It was an opportunity all of a sudden to exploit him. One guy was inside a tent selling T-shirts with Michael's picture on it. Yeah. I mean, it was just, wow, what is going on here?
At the same time, though, we
want to see a change. I don't want to just stand with the police. I want to see justice. Mm-hmm. I want bad cops to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want bad doctors to be fired.
Yeah.
I want justice to prevail. But I also know that what people want from the police is not something the police can deliver. They cannot act with perfection.
Yeah.
If you mention 7 or 8, 9, 10 people who've been unlawfully shot and killed by the police, as hurtful as that is and as bad as that is, still the vast majority of the 200 million contacts the police have every year with the public are good.
Yeah.
These numbers are very small. I wish we could get rid of them completely for everybody's sake. But,
because at the end of the day, like, if the numbers are small, and this is what statistics is, right? Like, if the statistics are small, then that's it, right? But if it happened to one family, it's not – they're like, I don't care how small the statistics is. My life and our child's life just got completely changed.
That's true. And that's where you want to be sympathetic and understanding.
Exactly.
We tend to believe things. Yeah. You know, you'll hear people say all the time, wow, things are worse than they've ever been before. That's not true. There is nothing going on today that did not go on 6,000 years ago when God created the world.
Yeah.
Look at
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, look at Sodom and Gomorrah. Lord. we had four people on the face of the earth one time, Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. One of them killed the other.
Yeah.
25% of the population. Killed 25% of the population. We got men trying to rape angels in the book of Genesis, which of course is the Sodom and Gomorrah story. Mm-hmm. The Bible says, and King Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
In reality, a lot of things have improved. For instance, in the last 25 years in America, we've cut the murder rate in half.
Wow.
Only half as many people are being murdered. Yeah. Chicago is terrible. Chicago used to have over 1,000 people murdered every year. They've almost cut that in half.
Wow.
Police killings are down. Even the school shootings, there is exaggeration in that. Yeah. A few years ago, Frank, I was watching a town hall meeting with President Obama. And one of the people at the town hall meeting was Taya Kyle, the wife of Chris Kyle, American Sniper. Mm-hmm. You remember the movie?
Yes, sir.
And she was the first one allowed to ask President Obama a question. And she said, Mr. President, why are we not celebrating the fact that gun violence and what have you has been going down for 40 years? And the president said, you are right, Ms. Kyle. We need to be celebrating that. Americans just don't know. We have a whole new generation coming along, kids in their 20s, late teens, early 30s. Man, it's worse than ever before. You don't know what worse is. World War I, World War II, mm-hmm. the 70s in Chicago, in New York, with all the corruption and mafia. Al Capone's Bonnie and Clyde. You don't know what real bad is right now. There's just a lot of people. You look at a lot of the people protesting. They don't even have any idea what's going on. If you interviewed them, and I watch interviews with them all the time, they're just caught up in the moment. They don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, and that's why I love ministry with young people, right? Because look at who's protesting. Yeah. it's young people.
And it's young people.
It's young adults, and a lot of times it's also high schoolers that are out.
Well, we also know it must be the unemployed also.
Yeah. Yeah, or they're choosing.
They don't work. I'm always wondering, why don't you guys work? I don't have time to protest. I got to make a living.
Or a lot of them are also like, you know, they're so fueled with passion that they're saying, I'm willing to lose my job for this. And that's why I believe in investing in the younger generation.
Oh, yeah. And I don't see any passion. I mean, I see it as hate. I mean, there's hate.
Hate is passion directed in a different route. Right?
It is. And the Bible says that passion rots the bones. Mm-hmm. You know, in the book of Proverbs, Solomon said passion, and the word there carries the idea of envy and hate. And that's what's happening with a lot of these guys. There's so much hate, and that's so dangerous. If you look at that from a Bible perspective, we're told that if you allow hate and anger to stay in your heart, it will open the door to a demonic side. And that's I was talking to a police officer in Portland, Oregon the other day. They've had over 100 nights straight of rioting. And a lot of what's going on there is, for instance, the city took down a statue of an elk, a big, you know, the deer-looking creature, the elk.
Yeah.
They took it down so the protesters wouldn't destroy it. And a lot of what's going on there now is they gather around that they've turned it into an altar, the foundation, the stone the elk was on, and they're channeling spirits and curses against the police officer. And they're channeling the spirit of, I forget the name, it's the demon spirit that guards the woods.
Yeah,
and there's the wall of moms is out there. These women who don't know what they're doing, in between the protesters and the police, you know, and just making matters worse. And what they're doing is we're tearing down our cities. I think people were willing. I mean, we were all ready to come to the table and talk after George Floyd. Let's fix this.
Yeah,
and no one saw. We've had over 584 cities that have had protest and rioting. And now the people that were willing to talk are like, and I talk to folks who tell me all the time, I lost interest. I don't want to do it now. I've got to think more in terms of how I protect myself and my family.
Yeah.
Because you know, we're just, we had a great opportunity.
It turned into something completely different.
No, it's awful. On top of this, the virus and everything.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing too. It's like, everyone's going through COVID, right? So a lot of people actually did lose jobs. And a lot of people aren't able to provide. So you can imagine the amount of anxiety and anger like inside of people right now who have been affected by COVID. And then this happens. And now there's an outlet to be able to like come out and stand for something that's good, but doing it in a wrong way, right? Like I do not agree at all with the rioting. I'm like, hey, protest, right? Like do something peaceful. And the lady that I had on here before you, she made a pretty valid point that I was like, I can see where you're coming from. I still don't agree you should riot and loot, right? But she was saying essentially how there's never been a peaceful protest that is effective. Like when women wanted women's rights, they did not get those until they started bombing buildings. And then they were like, these women are serious about this. We need to give them what they're asking for. And then you have, you know, when black people wanted to be freed as slaves too, you had like, it just turned violent. Like every single time it has to turn violent for something to happen, which I want to believe that that's not the case, but from looking at history, apparently it is the case.
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be those exceptions. There's no, you know,
there's no right
perfectly intact rule, but people, you know, people pay a high price for it. That
100%.
That 40-year Chicago retired police officer, an African American, sitting inside his friend's business in St. Louis when the looters came in there and shot him dead. There's no justification for that. He served that community for he was 70 years old. And you know, it says in the scripture, the anger of man cannot achieve righteous results.
Wow.
And you don't accomplish things.
Yeah.
This is way outside the boundaries. I mean,
yeah.
They need, Minneapolis needs over, and they've asked for over $55 million to repair their city.
Yeah.
We're all going to pay for that.
Yeah.
And I saw, you know, like one of the looters in St. Louis said, you know, or Chicago, she said, there's nothing wrong with us stealing all this property. These businesses have insurance and they'll cover it. And the looting, people are going in and stealing. They don't care about George Floyd or Martin Luther King or Michael Brown. There's a free stereo.
Yep.
And I've seen that. I've dealt too much with the criminal element. mean, this is just an opportunity.
And even one of the leaders from Black Lives Matter came out and said, if they need a loot, they can take whatever they need, right? They should take what they want. And I do not agree with that at all. Yeah,
I mean, I want to fix this.
I'm very pro the term Black Lives Matter, not the organization.
Oh, yeah. And I'm with that too.
And then whenever that lady came out and said that, I was like, you're not helping anyone saying this, because you just lost the voice of so many people that want justice, but do not want to back violence like this. Right?
They don't
want to
back violence. People are dying.
Police
officers killed in this thing. We've had 14 cops that I know of shot to death since this started.
Yeah.
You know, we've had over 111. Of course, a lot of guys, I have protesters who've said, hey, I love it when the cops are killed. I saw where a lady, her father was killed in South Texas about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And her father was a police officer. And he was killed in Copeland and his partner. And, you know, she put a picture of him on her Twitter account. And then protesters and rioters and whatever got on there and said, you know, your father was a pig. He deserved to die. I mean, that's the kind of hate these people have.
Yeah.
That's who these people are. I mean, I just look at them as, I know I'm probably over that. I just look at them as, you know, children of the devil. I mean, that's just the way they act, you know, and they're going to do that. Jesus said, you're of your father, the devil. He's a liar and a murderer.
Yeah.
And I see that in some police officers. That's why I have this ministry to police officers.
Yeah.
I've lost friends. I've got family members mad at me about this. I want to help them. I rode around a couple of years ago. I was in Portland, Oregon, riding around with the police. Portland only has 615,000 people. 3,500 people are homeless in Portland. Put that in perspective. Dallas has 2 million and 3,000 homeless people.
Yeah.
2 million people, 3,000 homeless.
Yeah.
Portland, they flock to Portland because, you know, the city's going to give them a shower. The city's going to give them food. And all over this beautiful area, Portland is a bunch of tents. And that city just is slowly disintegrating, falling apart. It's heartbreaking. And I talk to the officers there all the time. I talked to one the other day that said, I didn't even know we had a problem. We've been doing everything we can to reach out to the community and community policing and loving and serving and helping. Yeah. And now this.
So, you know, speaking on that, right, I kind of want to bring it around really quickly to your thoughts on defunding the police. And I kind of want to lay this out really quickly. speaking with this lady, right, because I didn't know what defunding the police meant besides the term abolish the police, defund the police. That sounds horrible. As soon as you hear that, like, I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. So before I made a opinion on Facebook, before I started posting memes, hopefully a lot of people are hearing this, I decided to talk about it with someone who is actually like an advocate for it and to hear why and what it is, all of that stuff. And she works in Dallas. She's an attorney in Dallas. She defends people against prosecutors. So like whatever that is. Right. And so she is 1,000% for abolishing prisons, everything.
Oh, yeah. They're out there.
And so I was like, okay, well, what is that? Because if there's a murderer, I kind of want him to, like, go to jail, you know?
Yeah.
And so she started explaining it in kind of a way where I was like, I can see where you're coming from, and there is really good in this. Now, how can we make that happen, right? So the whole movement behind abolishing is that they want, for example, in Dallas, it's over $516 million that goes specifically to the PD, right? To the police department. And then for like housing, education, everything like that, there's about $12 million roughly. So essentially Dallas police is getting...
And that's kind of what defunding means.
Yeah, exactly. Dallas police is getting about 70% of the budget for the entire city. And so their take on it is, we're taking money from schools and we're giving more money to police officers and to the whole unit to militarize them because, you know, riots are happening, bad things are happening. And so we need to give them better things to be able to de-escalate or at least, you know, control those situations. And so what their kind of belief is, why are we taking money away from schools? because then now they're not going to get proper education. We're not putting money into mentorship programs. We're not putting money into like homeless programs. We're not putting money into housing programs. We're taking money out of that to police the issue, which I kind of agree with because it's what we believe as Christians, right? You don't attack the symptom, you attack the root. So the root is in mentorship. It's like you said, who did Michael Brown so wrong? Nobody wanted him. There's no one there.
Well, I mean,
him.
What can't, it's not exactly an original idea, but you wonder, well, why can't mom and dad raise these children? We have 25 million kids in the country, 25 million that have nobody to call daddy.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think it stems from.
And what the lawyer there wants and what the rest of them want is, you know, they want society to take care of people. And
yeah.
You know, that's just what they want. Now, the police, I mean, Dallas is 1,000 police officers short. They are not ready for a crisis over there. You know, I was in downtown Dallas the night that they shot four or five police officers in Dallas. I was there that night. I remember the hate in that atmosphere. And it was just an awful night. Of course, five cops were killed and like 9 or 10 were injured. But of course, now the school districts, they get their money from, you know, the school taxes. That's a whole different thing. But the problem with, if you want to defund, there's, you know, defunding and abolishing are two different things. And the police are, and a lot of them are just kind of laughing at some of these things because they know, for instance, that there's talk about using social workers to go to calls. The police know it ain't going to work, but we're willing to let you do it because we don't like those calls anyway. I mean, they're so dangerous. We lose it. We have a lot of cops injured and stuff like that. But I'm a firm believer in the fact that we need to back off and rethink about some of the things we're doing. Dallas has a lot of crime. I mean, we've had presidents murdered there.
Yeah.
We've had cops murdered there. Dallas has, I don't know,
sex trafficking is insane.
It's
sex
awful.
Is insane.
I'm so actually there's having, the problem is who's going to deal with those people? You know, that's, and that requires money. And they are, Dallas had to bring in the highway patrol a few months ago to get help.
Yeah.
They don't have enough officers. They've been in a crisis. Nobody wants to work in Dallas. And I think it's a great place. I don't mean it like that. Mm-hmm. People just know that, gee, that's quite a mess over there. And there are a lot. As a matter of fact, Fort Worth has a special academy now for Dallas officers who transfer.
Yeah.
You know, they've had over 50 Dallas officers have left. It may be up to 100 now. But we're not going to see the police abolished. Yeah. That's just a waste of airtime when you have somebody like that on, which is you're free to do that. But now, Austin, Texas took, I think, $150 million away from the police. So, okay, the police just need to deal with that. Work within your means.
Yeah.
And if you can keep crime down, if we can come up with some better ways to help people, that would be wonderful. I know, Frank, I took over 600 people to the psych ward in my career. Over 600 people I took into custody and took them to the somewhere where they could get psychological help.
Yeah.
And then they're supposed to have a trial to see if they're mentally incompetent. In 30 years, I did not attend one trial. Why is that? Because when you take them to a psych ward, they're going to stay there a day or two. Sometimes they'll be back before you're even back to the city. They're going to have their medication that they're going to get. They're going to sell it on the street or throw it away. And it's just a revolving door. It's a circle that just keeps going around and around and around. The truth is the churches, I've been in the ministry 50 years. I've worked with thousands of churches. Churches aren't going to get their hands dirty. They're too busy forking over money for their billion-dollar building. They're not going to get involved in the, I know a church in Dallas that spent over $100 million. Downtown Dallas, in the hub of all that mess, they spent over $130 million to fix up their building. And I'll probably get in trouble for that. But hey, with all that poverty, with all those children, with the father, with all this mess we've got, I would love just to see the churches and other social organizations, instead of just running your mouth, instead of showing you've got diarrhea of the mouth, why don't you get involved in these people's lives? I've said to some of my friends, white friends, who said to me, well, I just think it's wrong the way we treat black people. Oh, I agree. Tell me about the black friends in your life. They've never even been to the house of a black man or woman. They've never had a black man or black woman over for dinner.
Yeah.
They'll never, They have nothing to do with people of opposite color. The truth is, whites hang around whites, blacks around blacks, Hispanics around Hispanics. We don't get along, but we want the police or the social services to fix this thing. And yeah. It's a bunch of malarkey. It's not. Why can't churches and God's people and those that care get involved? I mean, let's say with Isaiah the prophet, here am I, send me.
Yeah.
Send me, Lord, I'll go. That's why I'm fixing to head out on this mission trip to these police departments around the country. I know the police need help. Jesus said the sick need a physician. I'm trying to help them. That's why I teach verbal de-escalation. That's why I had 5,000 hours of training. And I tell these cops sometimes with tears in my eyes, brother, I'm trying to help you save your job.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help you. And the same problem is with the protesters. A lot of the cops are full of hate. A lot of the protesters, I don't think the looters care. They just want a new stereo or a pair of shoes. But there's others who actually think that all the noise is going to make a difference and all it's doing is draining our wallets. We're not going to have enough money to run water into these cities if we keep this up. That's why we just need a grace awakening in the country and to get involved. I would say to my white friends, hey, get involved. I mean, why does everybody feel led to move out into the country? Why not stay in the city and get involved in the? Most people don't even know the last name of the neighbors around them within walking distance, within 20 yards of their house. And we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something I did the other day in 30 seconds?
Yes, sir. Of course.
I was at McDonald's with my granddaughter. It was a Wednesday night. This was before the virus. And church was supposed to start at 6. We're eating a Big Mac at 5:15. Nobody's in there but me and her and one other lady. Every seat is empty except for three. A black man walks in. He gets his dinner. And he walks around looking for a place to sit. You know, there's 100 seats left. He's looking. And my heart just told me, invite him to sit with you. And I said, excuse me, sir. And he looked down at me. He said, yes. I said, I know you're black and I'm white, but I don't suppose you'd sit down here and have a conversation with me. Maybe we could become friends.
Wow.
He said, okay. He sat down. We've been talking for a year now.
Wow.
I said to him when he sat down, I said, now listen, my name's Jimmy. He said, my name's Michael. I said, you know, Mike, you're black. I'm white. We don't get along. I mean, you've read the papers. Why don't we share the story of each other's lives and maybe something will come out of it?
Wow.
I got his phone number right here on my phone. I'm not saying Jimmy's got the answer. I'm not saying WWJD means what would Jimmy do? I'm just saying, why don't we just start getting involved? I see it in all places. Yeah. I go to black churches where no white people go. I go to white churches with a black person in there. Hispanic church, try to find somebody of another color in a Hispanic church. And I'm not knocking any. They're not.
Well, that's a little different because a lot of different people don't speak Spanish.
Well, that's true. You got me on that. You can edit all of this out. I'm just saying.
No,
the answer,
no, I'm not going to edit any of this out.
This is how God is fixing the world. He said, I'm going to get involved. And the angel said, I'm making this up. What you going to do, God? I'm going to go to the earth and I'm going to put on a human body and I'm going to speak the lowest language known, the lowest form of Greek spoke. I'm going to run around with prostitutes and whores and drunkards and Republicans and Democrats. I'm going to just jump out there and the world is not going to like me. They're even going to say, why are you hanging around with those crackheads, potheads, and pill-popping prostitutes? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. This is what we have to do. Let's get involved. Get our hands dirty. That's what God did. He got his hands dirty. And that's the answer. I'm writing a book right now, Frank, for police officers. I hope to be done tomorrow. The last chapter is called, We Need an Invasion of the Black Community. And when people see that, they're going to go, uh-oh, militarization of the police. So read the first line. What we're going to have to do is take a Jesus approach. And I'm encouraging white police officers across this country, get out of the police car and visit black people and listen. Don't talk.
Yeah.
Listen. And then on the next call, listen. A friend of mine told me the other day he had a white friend that was ticked off about all of this. And he said this, well, I went to try to do something about it. I went and visited some black people, but they just didn't want to listen. Did you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
You don't go to visit black people right now to listen, to talk. Yeah. Listen. You may not agree, but just listen. The Bible says, let every man be swift to listen.
Yeah.
Slow to speak and slow to anger. just listen. I want to listen because I'm a white man. I grew up. I will never be and have been nothing but white. I don't have the. I don't know what it's like to go to a restaurant and be told you can't eat here. You're white. I don't know what it's like to see a water fountain that says no whites can drink from this. I don't know what that's like. I've never been the victim of discrimination. But I know we need to talk about that, listen to each other, and I know we have to find a way to move on or we're going to die in the midst of this thing. We've got to get involved in each other's lives so that we can become law-abiding, productive citizens. And we have to encourage the fathers to be fathers, the mothers to be mothers. Let's just do what we put on the earth to do.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I hope that makes a lot of sense.
No.
Me for this? That was a good sermon. I'm going to need it. My donate tab, I just got it up while ago on the app. So maybe you can go to that.
I love everything you just said because, first of all, I'm really thankful and grateful for the church that I am a part of, my church home, Church 1132, because they founded the Dream Center in Dallas, right? So essentially,
Started in Arizona, I think, of the Dream Center.
So this Saturday, if you want to come out, we're going to be in Oak Cliff by the Dallas Zoo, and we're going to be giving away groceries and praying for people. And just hanging out with people and
get involved.
I'm telling you,
y'all are a normal church. We need some more churches to be normal like y'all.
Yeah. And so some of the biggest things that I tell, like, even our leadership team with the youth and young adults is, like, my heart is for people, right? And once you got salvation, my heart's still for you and I'll be there for you. But guess what? Like, there's somebody who doesn't have Jesus and my heart breaks for them, like, so much. So I'm like, we have to catch a heart for people, a genuine heart for people that moves us to do something, right? Because everyone wants to come to church, and we've become a very selfish culture of Christians, right?
We just try to salvage our own boat. Trying to keep it from sinking.
We're just like,
I pastored a church. I know what it's like.
Yeah, and we're just like, oh, there's water in my boat, so I got to fix this before I can do anything else. And I'm like, first of all, you'll never be able to fix yourself well enough to be allowed Amen. To minister. I'm like, that's not what the Bible says.
I told
says.
You my Fix It, like, Jimmy story the other day, I think.
Yes,
I
mean, exactly. So I tell people all the time, like, we have got to ask God to give us his heart, because guess what? When he gives us his heart, even though, yes, I'm going through something, you've also conquered so many other things. So just come and talk to someone. And guess what? If you have nothing to offer, like, if you have nothing good to say because you feel like you haven't done anything in your life, you have an ear to hear. And that sometimes is 10 times more powerful than your mouth speaking.
My police chief used to tell me, Jimmy, if you would just listen to people when you're on a call, half the time they'll think you've solved their problem.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that's why my wife, my kids, when they need to talk, they don't call me. We get along good. They call mama, because my wife is an incredible listener. She knows how, you know, Frank, and it's part of sacrifice. You know, just, I used to say at my church, hey, if you're fixing to go on a vacation and spend $2,000, you always get to. This family doesn't get to. Why don't you forfeit your vacation this year and help them go on one?
Wow.
Why can't we just, Jesus went to the extremes to show his love.
Wow.
The brutal, beaten, battered, bloodied body of Jesus is the expression of God's love and sacrifice. And we are called to a life of sacrifice. We may not have to make the ultimate sacrifice, but we can and should live a life of sacrifice.
Yes. You
know, Paul said one time, Greet Priscilla and Aquila. They risked their lives for me. Well, instead of you going out and buying a new car, Mr. Johnson, you got plenty of money. Why don't you go buy a car for that family that has no car? Go buy a car for that family. You know, do you really need to live in that million-dollar house? Why don't you sell it and buy 10 houses for people who don't? But we are so far. We have heard Charles Stanley say one time, you've heard of him, I'm sure. Charles Stanley said, we have an American brand of Christianity. We actually think God exists to make our dreams come true.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. He never invited anybody to follow him so that their dreams could be fulfilled. Wow. He invited people, as the great martyred Dietrich Bonhoeffer, if you've ever heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
He was murdered, put to death by Hitler in World War II. He was a pastor. You know, Bonhoeffer once said, when Jesus calls a man, he calls him to come and die.
That's true.
That's what we do. Paul said, I die daily.
Yeah.
Jesus said, you want to be my disciple, you need to renounce all your possessions. Now, I'm not saying you need to become homeless, but just think, if we just started living simpler, we might have more money to sow into other people's lives and help them.
Wow.
Instead of saying, we need the city of Dallas to take care of the homeless. The city of Dallas has had 200 years to take care of the homeless.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And if they do and I'm wrong, that's wonderful. One of the problems in dealing with the homeless sometimes is the mental thing. You can put them in it. I've seen this many times. You can put them in a new house and they'll lose it within a month or two because you know, they don't even know how to function in a house. Sometimes they've never even lived in one. Yeah. So you're going to have to.
There's a whole new thing that you need to work in
life.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's a dirty work.
Yeah.
And this is going to be tough to fix all this, but we can do it.
And I love that you said like get involved because a lot of people sometimes think like, okay, if I just give someone money, like, you know, I got involved, right? If I just
bought him a fifth of whiskey is what you did.
And that's part of it, right? It's like part of it is yes, giving money. But exactly for what you just said, right? You probably just bought him 50 whiskeys. So don't just give them money, but build a relationship and be like, hey, I am going to help you build something really quickly with this, right? Like I'm going to help you navigate this money to where it lasts you this and that or whatever. But we don't do that because that takes time and we don't give away what's more valuable to us.
If we got to get home, watch TV. My favorite show comes on.
Yeah. If we don't see value in it, we won't sacrifice the most valuable thing to us. Right. So the most valuable thing to anybody in this world is time. So I would almost tell anyone who's listening to this, what are you investing your time into?
Yeah.
Right. If you really want to see people's lives change, are you investing time into their life or are you just investing time into something else? Like,
and Frank, you know what you could do, right? For instance, I live two blocks from a junior high. They told me 3 years ago, Mr. Meeks, we need mentors, 20 of them. Sit with the kids Monday for 20 minutes. That's all we need. Sit with them. You play chess, checkers, or talk about their life. I said, no problem. I have a bunch of seniors at my church. They'll want something to do. I went down there. I could not get one volunteer. So there's something. If some of you folks who are stay-at-home dads or retired grandpas, go to the local school and say, what can I do here? Oh, thank you. Well, could you mentor a kid one day a week? Well, I have a degree in algebra. Oh, maybe you could tutor. We just keep waiting for somebody else to do it, or we look for the big thing.
Yeah.
But all you got to do is slip over there to the school district and say, hey, I'd like to be a volunteer. Get involved in the community.
Yeah.
It's so – my wife – I mean, I was a cop 30 years. I retired. My wife became the senior – chaplain of the police department. She's involved in those guys' lives. She prays with them, the guys and the gals. She's there when she performs weddings for them. She's trying to help the police. She's involved in their life. My daughter Lydia went overseas and lived with refugees, run out of Iraq because they were Christian by ISIS. She went over there and lived in that mess for 1 year.
Wow.
Sacrificed everything to go over there, tried to help families. Now they're stuck in Jordan. Thousands of Christians are stuck in Jordan. She's finally real close to having one family that's going to be able to move to Canada. She's involved in their lives. She lives down in Austin. She's involved in suicide prevention. She's involved in domestic violence. She's just giving her life. She sings and worships. And I got to call her when I get off just to let her know how much I love her. Involvement is the key. Don't say what you think the police ought to do, folks. Do what you ought to do.
Wow.
Do what you ought. The police are out there to keep you from getting hurt. I mean, they're not really going to fix all this. But churches, you can jump in there, go like a tidal wave, and maybe the crest of your waters will invade the city, and we could turn this ship around before it sinks.
Yeah, I think what you just said is a huge, huge part of it, especially when you were talking about getting police officers to get out of their car and talk to people and listen to people and empathize with people. And I think that's what people like right now. I think we are in a season in life where everybody wants to be heard. But when they don't feel heard, their voice only gets louder, and then they start screaming.
That's true.
And it's what's happening there. You have one side who's trying to say, you know, Black Lives Matter. Then you have another side that's trying to say All Lives Matter. And they're just like, well, listen to my point. No, you listen to my point. And this is what I don't like about debates, right? Is that you never end a debate choosing a different side.
No, you're probably madder than you were when it started.
Exactly. So
hey, Frank, you got that situation. You're right. over here, they said Black Lives Matter. Over here, All Lives Matter. Meanwhile, a single mom with six kids is sitting in Chicago wondering if a bullet's going to come flying through the window and kill one of her children, which happens all the time when you could just get involved. Yeah. You know, and this ain't the time for the debating. This is the time for deciding. And this is the time for jumping in. If I am drowning, if you see me drowning, please don't stand on the sideline and try to figure out how to save me. Just come get me.
Yeah.
You know, throw me something. Throw me a rope or a raft or a life jacket or whatever. Don't just stand over there debating, is he really drowning or whatever. My illustration's pretty poor. But at the same time, involvement is the key. We ought to have a problem with too many people involved. And I don't just mean you teach Sunday school at church or you work the nursery. Get out there in the marketplace. You know, get out there. When I was a police officer, the day I retired, I loved getting out of the car, Frank. I loved it. That was the heart of Jesus in me. I love people. Mm-hmm. I loved getting out. I was 55 years old. I was a bicycle cop. I would get on my bicycle and drive around town and make 20, 30 contacts with people. Ask them, how you doing? Is there anything we can do? The day I retired, my police chief looked out at all the people. My retirement party, the chief looks out at everybody and says, well, Jimmy's leaving. Is anybody here going to start getting out of the car now? Who's going to do that?
Wow.
And I had a great police department, but a lot of cops are not real people. You know, they just want to deal with crime and what have you. But, you know, this is not the time for the public to say we don't like the police. This is the time for the public that knows what to do to start doing it. If something is not within your control to fix, then you probably don't want to waste a lot of energy on it because you can only do what you can do. And same thing I say to my friends in Austin that are police officers. They took $150 million from you. Okay, get over it. Work with less. We got soldiers that are 20 years old overseas fighting terrorists. They don't get to say, well, I don't like this uniform. I'm going home. I ain't playing no more. I mean, they can go to prison if they go AWOL. You know, so we're soldiers, especially those of us that are believers. You know, we're in the war.
Well, we should be. We should be in the war. Let's
get out there and fight the enemy. I don't want to sit on the stands and watch the game. I want to play.
Yeah.
I want to play. I want to score that winning touchdown or hit that home run or make that winning basket. I don't want to watch this thing from the stands.
Exactly. We need participators in the kingdom. And like, we're always praying, right? We're always praying for revival. We're always wanting revival. Yeah. But revival doesn't come until an awakening happens first. And the awakening is within yourself.
It is.
And because what ends up happening is if there's an awakening in you and you open your eyes and you feel the pain, that's why one of my prayers every single day, which sometimes I regret praying it, is God, like, give me your heart and give me your eyes. Let me see people how you see them. Like, let me love people like you love them. And I mean, like, in here. So there'll be times where I'm at, like, even just last night, I was up till like 3 a.m. I could not sleep because I was thinking of family members, friends, people that I've met, and just like pain that they're probably going through. And I'm like, what can I do to, and sometimes, honestly, it's just reaching out. Honestly, it's just reaching out. But we want revival, but we don't want to be woken up. Everyone right now is talking about being woke. Have you heard that term? Yeah. I'm like, well, it's
another one of those terms with cancel culture and everything else.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, it's time to be
acting.
Yeah. I'm like, let's use that into a positive thing and actually be woke in the kingdom and be woke to what's happening and then start moving and doing something. The fact that you invited that gentleman to sit down with you and eat a burger probably has way more effect. Like, and you're noticing it now. You guys have been friends now for a year, right? Like, you may have just changed the trajectory of his life. We don't know that, right? But
I can tell you this, Frank. After I left him at McDonald's, 20 minutes later, him and his girlfriend showed up at our church on Wednesday night weeping.
Wow.
I forgot to tell you that part. And then we took her to lunch. And, you know, the truth is, too, you keep talking about the heart. New covenant, New Testament Christianity is New Covenant Christianity. We have a new heart. He took out the heart of stone.
Yeah.
We have everything we need inside of us. It's called the new heart. And Paul said in the book of Romans, he said, brothers, you are full of goodness. And that new heart inside of us is bursting at the seams to do good. I never will forget a beautiful illustration I saw this one day that God helped me with. I was visiting an 80-year-old man who had just met the parents the day before. He was a heart transplant recipient. I went into this little convenience store that he owned, and he was sitting there. He was in a very quiet, contemplative mood, which was very unlike him. I said, Dave, what's on your mind? You seem kind of quiet today. He said, well, I told you I'm a heart transplant recipient. I said, yes, sir. He said, well, yesterday I met the parents of the donor. It was a 17-year-old girl. I said, wow. And then he looked at me. He smiled and he said, sometimes I get these urges to go to the mall. And he was kidding about that part,
yeah.
But he wasn't kidding about getting a new heart. You and I, as believers, we have a new heart, and it's full of urges to do good. It wants to bless. It wants to give. Now, I was reading in the scripture this morning that a righteous man is generous. He lends, he distributes, he's giving, he's blessing. It seems to be that he's doing everything but taking care of himself because he's lost his life for a higher cause. As believers in the kingdom, we have a heart that is bursting at the seams with a desire. It wants to erupt like a volcano for the lava of goodness to flow out of us, to pop out of us, and bless everybody in our lives. But we just keep thinking somebody else ought to do it, or maybe I'm not qualified. Yeah. But hey, anybody can come down there this Saturday with y'all at Oak Cliff and pass out food and help. And there's so many things we can do. We just keep looking for the big opportunity.
Yeah.
And you know,
that's so
can
true.
I tell you this, Frank? Can I tell you this, something right quick?
Yeah, of course.
One day I was on duty and my sergeant said, Jimmy, I need you to go down to the grade school in your district and have lunch with the kids, community policing. And I didn't really want to go. I said, well, not today, Sarge. He said, well, I'm not asking you. Go. I said, okay. And I was in kind of a bad mood, but I repented. I went down to the grade school. I walked in there at 11:30. I said hi to all the kids. I went around shaking their hands, and I was feeling so good. I was blessing every one of them under my breath, you know. I finally got me a plate of food. I sat at the table on the very end. I looked out at all the kids, 150 of them, eating, laughing, and talking. I thought, this is fun. God, thank you for bringing me here today. I started to take my first bite of food. I looked across the table. There was a little boy there. He was talking to everybody else, and he was the only student in there with no food. And I said, what's your name? And he said, Larry. I said, Larry, I can't help but notice everybody's eating except for you. Why aren't you eating? Are you hungry? He said, I'm real hungry. I said, well, why aren't you eating? He said, well, my mama forgot to give me any money this morning. Wow. Now, I knew the neighborhood. She probably didn't have any money. I said, so you don't have any money, but you're hungry? And he said, officer, I'm so hungry. And his tears swelled up in his eyes. I ran over to the teacher and said, Larry doesn't have anything to eat. He don't have no lunch money. She said, oh, no. She went over there and said, Larry, get in line. I'll cover you today. And Frank, something happened to me in that moment. I had to go. There was a closet in the corner. I ran over there and got in the closet and shut the door and wept like a baby. And I heard the voice of God. I hope it's okay to say this.
Yeah.
He said, son, you didn't want to come here today. But I knew that little boy would be hungry. And his cry of hunger came up before me. And I sent you there to see to it that he gets to eat. So that's what it means. The yeah. simplest little thing. You may not get to preach at Cowboy Stadium, but you can give away a cup of cold water
yes, sir.
In his name. Quit yes, waiting sir. For the big thing. God ain't going to give you something big till you can do. Maybe he can't trust you with a little thing. Yeah. Why would he give you a Lexus if you won't even take care of your Ford? You know?
Yeah. No, it's true. And that's something that I try and voice very, very often is that we're all looking for a platform when the real work and the real like gratification comes from the pasture, working in the pastures, right? Yes. Like being
there's
in there.
The platform. Like you got a platform. Just
being in there.
There,
being in there with the flock. There was yesterday I was at, you know, our Wednesday night service for our youth and young adults. And I was really emotional because there was this one guy who cleans the church, right? He doesn't work for the church. He's contracted by the company that cleans the church. And he had been doing that, I don't know for how long. I had seen him a couple of times. And then one day I just got it in my head. I was like, man, I'm just going to make a joke with this dude real quick. And so I just started a conversation with him, made him laugh, ended up getting his phone number, ended up inviting him to like my group. He doesn't believe in God. He like whatsoever. He believes in like science, all these different things, right? Well, he ends up coming to my group and starts asking questions, being intrigued in what we're talking about, just asking questions. And then I see him this week at the church, and I'm like, what's up, bro? Hey. And he had the biggest smile on his face, right? Completely different from what he had been the other times. And he was like, hey, man, what time does it start tonight? I'm going to be here. And he sat in service, mm-hmm. right? And so just the fact that he was willing and open to hearing about God, because I made a conversation mm-hmm. with this dude, and then I showed him, hey, bro, like, you're worth time. Right? You're worth me texting. You're worth me talking to you late after my group ends. You're worth me, like, you know, like all of these things. Next thing you know, like, he starts encountering God little by little by little. I gave him my Bible last night. Right. No, he was like, well, bro, I don't want your Bible. Look, it has all these notes in it. And I was like, well, bro, just keep it until you buy yours. I'm like, and if I don't get it back, I know where you work, dog. And I know jiu-jitsu, so I'll put you on the ground real quick.
Frank said that, not Jim. I want to say too, Frank, because you've quoted several people that were guests before me, the lawyer and the protesters and others who would very much disagree with me. And if they're listening, I sure want them to know that, you know, you can go to my website, sheepdogseminars.com. My phone number is there. My email is there. I would love to talk. I'll listen.
Love that.
So please don't think that I just got on here to shoot down what you've said. If you're one of the previous guests or somebody who is listening to me and you're very upset, my phone number, I mean, I don't even, if Frank wants to put it on there, he can. I don't care. You can, I mean, we're not at a place where I need to be right. We need to, if you need to be heard, if you disagree with me, if you want to vent, I'm 62 years old. I've raised 6 teenagers. I know what that's like.
Yeah.
You are more than welcome to call me because I know we want to solve this thing. Just some things I'm realistic about. I know that the police and prisons, we got to fix the criminal justice system. There's too many people in prison that should not be there.
Yeah.
Too many people, thousands. We have more people in prison than any country in the world, 3 or 4 million.
Yeah.
That's because of some bad laws that were passed 30 years ago.
Yeah.
The 3 strikes and you're out and all kinds of things. And I want to see those guys come out and have a good life. I wish we could abolish it. And we are going to abolish all of that someday. But that will be when the heaven and the new earth comes along. Until then, we're just going to have some problems. But hey, let's do what we can. You go fishing. Sir. You don't catch every fish in the lake, but you catch what you can.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know? Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on.
You bet, buddy.
Is there any practical way that somebody that wants to help in this specific issue to get involved with you, maybe with your ministry, the Cornelius Project? Well,
they can go to my have another website, sheepdogseminars.com. And I don't know what you're going to – where you post this at, but you're more than welcome to put that on there. Sheepdogseminars.com. My phone number's on there. My email is on there. You can call me if you want to. If you're interested in reaching out to the police, I know a lot of people don't even want to reach out to the police. Well, we've got to, because they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I want to help them. I love them. I'm fixing to go on a mission trip. I haven't said where, because I didn't want people to know I'm coming, but I'm going to these hot spots, you know, across the country where these police are.
Yeah.
Because they don't like what's going on either. You know, there's no cop in this country right now that I know that's having a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're discouraged. We've had over 100 cops commit suicide. 32 have been shot to death. Over 100 have died from the virus. You know, and we had a police officer shot and killed in Cleveland last Thursday. And then a few hours later, another Cleveland police officer took his own life. It bothered him so much. So nobody likes this. So if you want to get a hold of me, sheepdogseminars.com. Get a hold of friends. They know how to get a hold of you. They can get a hold of you, right? Just give them a number.
Yeah, I'll blast your info. Are you going to be going to the Dallas Police Department at any point?
Well, I'm always going over.
Because I would love to. I would love to tag along with you and join you in that.
Well, I have visited. I know I've known a lot of guys over the years there. I'm going to go outside of Texas on this first trip, but then we'll come back and, you know, we'll hit Dallas. I mean, I've stood up for them. I told you I was in Dallas the night they killed the officers and had a really weird experience. Maybe we can talk about that some other time. But I'm going to reach out to those guys, and I always am reaching out to them. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to call one today, and I have a friend over there who just retired from there, and I've known a lot of them. But we want to reach them all, because the police are as discouraged about all this as everybody else. Yeah. And the police, nobody dislikes a dirty cop more than the good cops.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten some at it. There have been cops I've worked with, Frank, when they quit, I threw them a party because I was glad they quit. I'm exaggerating. I'm just like, oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
We all want the bad cops and bad doctors and bad ministers, and all that stuff to change. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Yes, sir. No, thank you so much for coming on. I genuinely appreciate
you. Straight to my new I'm so excited. My new donate page is up. Why don't you get over there and donate a couple of hundred grand, Frank? I know you got money.
Oh, if I had it, I would. Trust me. I'll do my share, though. I promise. I always try.
I would not play with you. Better not. You have the Texas hat on, and I have a California hat on today. Did you notice it? I got this in California.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jimmy.
Thank you.
I'm gonna outro us out really quickly. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today, man. I really appreciate you guys, everyone who joined in. If you found this beneficial at all and you were encouraged at all, please go to what was it, Sheepdog Seminars?
Sheepdog Seminars.
Yeah, go to Sheepdog Seminars. Reach out to Jimmy. Just send him an email or even give him a ring and just tell him you appreciate him, what he's doing, and find a way to get involved, whether that's in the community or with police enforcement. Like, we need people involved everywhere. It's the only way we're going to solve it. We're all looking for an answer. We have the answer. It's just not comfortable and it's not convenient. So it's time to step out, guys. I appreciate you guys. Make sure you guys tune into the next episode.
Let's just be real.